Hey everyone, welcome back to the show. Today's episode is with Erwan Geoffroy. He is the creator of the Water Sports Zone. He joins us from his home in France to talk early days of windsurfing, how he found wing foiling, why he started his YouTube channel, and more. So I hope you enjoy this episode. He's an amazing guy that's doing a ton for our community. So yep, I hope you enjoy it. Now, if you haven't had the opportunity to listen to last week's episode, it was with the legend himself, Gary Sisker from Ride Engine. Ride Engine actually has a pretty cool origin story. So he introduces it to that. He also introduces to the brand, talks about his personal journey of finding win, and also what goes into making good accessories. So I hope you enjoy that episode. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank our team. We have Frank on social media and podcast consulting. We got Matthias on content and guest relations. And we have Stefan on audio, video editing, and producing. Matt and Frank live in Germany. And our editor, so our buddy Stefan, he lives in Bali. So it's all parts of the world working together. This show would not be possible without them, as a lot of work goes into producing every single episode. So we do thank you guys for your hard work and dedication to the community. So that being said, if you'd like to support our podcast team, the easiest way is just give us a follow on Instagram, YouTube, and on your favorite podcast provider. You can also hop over to winglifepodcast.com and click on support us to donate a few dollars or jump on a monthly subscription. These funds will go directly to help cover our monthly expenses so that we can produce even more content. So we appreciate your support and we hope you enjoy today's episode. Welcome to the Wing Life Podcast, where we talk about wing foiling and the lifestyles of those who enjoy this great sport.
All right, Erwan, thanks for joining me on the show today. Super stoked to be chatting with you.
Hey, thanks for inviting me.
Yes. So a little bit of backstory. I was talking to my friend Francisco Goya in Maui a little while ago, and he mentioned that you were doing some awesome stuff on YouTube and that I should check it out. So then we thought, hey, if we check it out on YouTube, we might as well invite you on and have a conversation, see where it all came from.
Yeah, thanks. Well, thanks, Francisco, for giving us the opportunity to meet, maybe. And he's such a great person. I'm feeling grateful to have met him like long time ago, but still in touch with him and be inspired by him very often. And as soon as you talk, I think there is something to learn. And yeah, thanks, Francisco.
Yeah, he's one of the godfathers, I guess, of windsurfing. And it's really cool to see how inclusive he thinks and then how he tries to help other people in the water sports and tries to find a place for everybody who has a passion. So I do thank him for that, because not everybody has that as a part of their mission, I guess, and he does. So that's pretty special. So, but talking about you, when did you even think you would start on YouTube? Not everybody decides to do that. So when did you think, okay, I love wind, I love water, but let's do something about it?
Back in the day, I was, that's how I met Francisco. I was, managing some, magazines in France, basically the main magazines for water sports in France was Wind magazine for windsurfing, Kiteboarder magazine for kiting. We had also SUP magazine. We created also another one, Wing Surf magazine, and it was basically a printed magazine. We had created a website as well. But for the business, the print magazine was like like a business model quite established, but going down slowly but surely. And website were not actually working. I mean, they have an audience still, but not like something you can make money with. And so I was thinking, oh, we could switch to the digital media. And from my analysis, I was like, okay, YouTube is the perfect way to go because it's more like a long time video information. You can take time and just explain things. You know, it's not just like just emotion like on Instagram or on TikTok. You can go fast and get some emotion to the people in 2 seconds and then see if people stays or not, and then the algorithm works or not. But YouTube is a bit different. So in my position as a ad editor, I was like, I want to do that. I want to go on YouTube. And I wasn't the owner of the company, just managing a small part in the company, or small part, but already 3-4 magazines. But... And the owner didn't like actually want to invest money and go to this into this project. So we were in I think it was 2020, just after the COVID. I was thinking a lot about that during the COVID period, and at the end of 2020, I released my first video, and I invested my own money to buy a camera, to my own time to mount to edit the video and put myself in front of the camera, which I was not like, it was not like if I was not comfortable with it. I mean, I'm easy to speak in front of a camera, no problem, but it was more like I was feeling a bit strange because I was used to put some riders in front of the camera in the highlight, and yeah. I felt like it would be more complicated for me to do that with a rider because it was my project, so I should have explained them exactly what to do, how to speak, how to explain, and it would have cost me so much more time. So I decided to do it myself, and at this moment, I didn't like realize that it could grow this fast. You know what I mean? And then, yeah, I decided, I think 1 year and a half after starting, I decided to quit the company with a print media and just work on my YouTube channel and consulting company, my consulting company.
Okay, so what's your consulting company?
Well, it's just a small agency for communication, marketing stuff. But most of my time, I spend it like for my YouTube channel, producing content, and filming, testing. And yeah.
Oh, that's cool! Congratulations!
Having fun a lot as well.
Yeah, I think that's. That's important in this industry for sure, to take some time to have some little fun, a little bit of riding time for you too, right?
Yeah, it's my life. I mean, I would not doing that if I was not like riding almost every day because it's what I live for. So, of course, I have my family, I have people around me, but I'm living for riding, for this feeling, you know, at the end of the day when you spend hours on the water, you are like tired, but this feeling is unmatchable.
Yeah, no, I think all of us all of us understand that one for sure. For those meeting you, Erwan, for the first time out in other parts of the world, when did you come across contact with wind for the first time? Like, where did you grow up and a little bit more about you?
I grew up in La Torche. Maybe most of the people who have a windsurf background know La Torche. It is a famous spot in Brittany, so northwest France. And this spot used to host some PWA World Cup back in the day. Last one was in 2016. But before, in the 80s, there was good memories for most of the rider of this period, Bjorn, Dunkerberg, Robin Esch. I think they appreciate coming here. And yeah,
cool.
I grew up here, started windsurfing when I was a teenager. And then going like, what I would say, professional into windsurfing. Still in Brittany, France, and then moved to South France. So now I'm living in Toulon, which is next to the spots. The most famous spot is L'Almanach. So maybe some of you can know where it is. And yeah, I moved to South France when I started to work for Wind Magazine. So it was
Okay.
in 2006. And now I'm in Toulon for this time.
And then how did you like find how did you find that wind sport for the first time? What did you start with? Obviously, you started windsurfing, but when did you get into wing foiling for the first time?
Wing foiling, I think it was in 2019. It's at the very beginning of the sport. My first session, I think, was in Taifa, Bologna, during a meeting with the Boards and More crew.
Oh, okay.
And I think it was in June. Yes, June 2019. And Boards and More just released I think it was maybe the first production wings and foils for winging. So we had a try. Actually, for me, I was already foiling for a while in windsurfing, in kiteboarding, and it was like I would say I didn't really ap appreciate it as much as I appreciate it now, because it was easy and slow. I mean, I was kite foiling already. Kite foiling is very, I think it's very difficult for if you want to start foiling. Maybe
Oh
the worst
yeah,
idea is
that
to
one's
go
tough.
to do it with a kite, because it's very, very technical, and so very challenging. And you go very fast, quite as soon as you fly, you go very fast. And then when I tried the wing foiling, I was like, okay, it's fun, but it's not a revolution, you know.
Yeah, I don't think this is going anywhere.
No. I was thinking there was a potential, because I realized that when I started kite foiling, which was for foiling the most exciting I mean, way of foiling at the moment. I realized that it was very difficult. I mean,
This
for
is
people like coming in the summer as a on the shoreline, and almost impossible to go kite foiling, for example. Wind foiling a bit more easy, but carrying the gear and everything, it's like a bit complicated. So I've from the early days, I understood the potential. I felt it was like easy, it was like easy way to go foiling, so the potential. But for me, it was like yeah, maybe we'll see. And then I started appreciating it like 3 4 months later, with more with smaller gear, faster foils.
Well, yeah.
And but my first session, I was like so, you know.
I think most of our first sessions were, well, I guess I started windsurf foiling, and then that I found was an easy way into it because I was a windsurfer. So all I had to do was lean back with my sail and lean forward with my sail, and my board would go up. So that I found was pretty straightforward after windsurfing for a long time. And then the transition to wing foiling was fairly easy. But yeah, the foils were a bit slower. I started an F1. They had an awesome first generation wing, so that was pretty cool. But yeah, did you think that it would explode this quickly as it has? Because foiling had been around for a long time, right? Like nobody had really done it, and then boom, all of a sudden, it's kind of becoming mainstream, but foiling had been around for years. Yeah.
Yeah, but I was not surprised that it exploded this fast, because I think winged foiling has been the first water sport to emerge, to exist since social media. Then social media, and I'm a good example for that, but you can share your experience, your knowledge, and make it easier for other people very fast. And even to know that this sport exists. And before, at the beginning of kite surfing, for example, from the early days in maybe South France, or maybe Hawaii, or maybe Brittany, we still don't really know. To let the people be aware of this existing, it took years. But for winged foiling, then Kailini doing I don't know, three jive in Maui, and then the world was aware of that. So the world was wanting to try. And then we had another problem. It was the capacity of the industry to deliver to get the gear available to the people. But the request of gear and the need for people to try was very strong. So I think the key part of the explosion of winged foiling is social media.
And hence what you're helping with. But now, like, I've talked to a lot of brands, and they're saying that the market has pretty much peaked. There have a lot of product sitting in warehouses. Like, we can talk about this, we can edit it out later if you're not comfortable. But like, I've talked to a bunch of brands, and it's just sitting there. So what they're trying to do now is expand beyond the current reach of current clientele, because there's a flooding of new companies, new gear, and they can't sell it. So coming from your side of things, where do you see that kind of evolving? And have you seen that as much on your side?
Yeah, of course, I have seen that.
Yeah.
To be honest, I thought it would happen earlier, because with the COVID, all the brands had some trouble with shipment, producing the gear and stuff, and there is lots of requests from the market, and I think every single people were looking for the gear from calling every shops everywhere. And in fact, it created a demand that was like a bubble, you know?
Okay. Yeah.
Because it's difficult for me to explain this very accurately in English, but you know, if me, I call 3, 4, 5 shops, because they don't reply on my request, then if all those shops report to the brand, we have a lot of requests, but it's only the same people, you know. So
yeah,
it was like a bit a bubble, and then it kind of worked, because the sport was actually exploding, so it was working. But then at some point, so many brands overproduce, and then so many new brands came to winged foiling because, their other activity were like stand-up paddling, or like going down, or maybe even windsurfing or kiting. Or they were looking at winged foiling as the new Eldorado. And then too many actual brands overproducing, too many brands, and then we are the situation we are now, which is not very good for the industry, but somehow it's kind of good for the people because then the there are a lot of how would say some discount.
Okay. Yeah.
Some
okay.
discount for the gear, so the gear is more affordable, and on short term it's quite good. On long term, it means that the brands would have less margin to develop new gear to support the sport as a sport. I mean the competition, riders, producing content and stuff like this. But I think it will make the with time will make the industry more I would say LC because somehow some I think it's I don't wish it for anyone, but some brands will
they'll go out of business. Some will.
Yeah, it's a good one, another business or whatever, you know.
Yeah, but that is a good way and good idea, and we could probably talk about your contribution into helping new people find the sport, because we had a lot of windsurfers carry over, a lot of kiters carry over, but early on I was talking to Wyatt Miller and we were like, how do we get and expand our reach to have more people wing foil or even wing on a sup? And I think what you're doing and the time you're taking to produce like high quality, very good videos that explain all the steps, kind of like what Damien, Leroy, and Gwen are doing in the US in the English format, you're doing it for the French population, which is huge. Like I think that will help spread, because it's not everybody follows a pro athlete, not everybody knows a brand. Like if you step outside of our world, somebody might not even know the best pro, but they might catch your video on YouTube and they might say, oh, this is super fun. Like maybe I could do this. So I think the work you're doing is very important. And like we have all this gear sitting there to be sold, but something like yourself might be able to help get it out there, right?
Yeah, thanks for your good word. My world.
You're welcome.
From my point of view, I'm on the second wave. I mean, the first wave is thanks to social media helps a lot. But I think brands, riders, like top riders, like they produce amazing content. And this is what touches other people first, because scrolling on Instagram, they don't even know who is Kailini, they don't even know who is Titouan, but their viral content might touch them, and oh yeah, I want to do this sport. You know what I mean? And then they will tap on YouTube, Wingfall or whatever they have remembers from what they've seen. On social media today, but could also be mainstream media like TV or newspaper whenever they just want to do something about our sports, which is not every day, unfortunately. But then they search on YouTube, and then they can find the people like me or like Damien and Gwen, and then they will get some information to get started and to improve their skills. And sometimes they feel like more they have more connection with someone like Gwen or me or Damien or other guys giving some tips. Then compared to top riders, like way better than us, where they are just guys doing some, They're just guys like, doing
just
some
for us, it's amazing hard.
Skills, but sometimes they don't even, these people, they don't even remember their name because it's outside their world. And my role is more like to connect this all together, you know?
I see what you're saying. Yeah, that's a really valid point, actually. So you got your like people out in the front, and then you'll have the next network and the next wave of people helping connect the public to that, and then giving much deeper understanding, breaking it down to the basics. Because I don't even know if I'll ever land a backflip, and my riding skills are like, they're okay. But then you have the people who are just trying to get up on the board. Like, how did you find, here, let's back that up. What was your first video like that you did? Was it easy? Was it stressful? Was it weird being in front? Like, we had talked a little bit before, like, you're now the main person that people are looking to, right? On your channel?
Well, yeah, on my channel, yes. My first video, I think it's maybe the most successful yet. I'm not sure. Maybe it's just something like in the third or fifth, which is the most successful. But the first video were very successful, and still, because it were they were on very basic skills. That's where the base of the pyramid. That's the step that everyone needs to go through. So that's true. The more popular video. This means something like, I think, 250,000 views, I think, at the moment, or maybe a bit more, I don't know. And me, I wasn't like twice that much because I didn't, it was impossible for me to imagine that it could reach so many people.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Even you are just speaking to a camera. I say you are alone with the camera almost. So, no, it was not like stressful. But when I avoid to look at this to watch this video because I'm a bit like I could have done maybe more effort, more. I could have given more of myself to make it more clean. Or, well, that's the way it is. No regrets, no problem.
No regrets, no problem, and keep moving forward. What was your favorite night? Where are you recording all your videos?
Most of my videos, at the beginning, I was recording outside at the beach most of the time. But it's at the beach, it's a bit like you have some constraint because of the sound, because of the wind, because of many things. So I started to do it more simple than in my garden.
Okay.
And now to get it more simple, I do it most of the time sometimes in my boardroom. Which is my garage, basically, and sometimes in the living room as well, in one of my accommodation, and to get the sound clean, to have the light clean, and to be quiet. I mean, no one coming, just like it's like So most of the
more so your studio.
It's almost like a studio.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool. Now, and you've obviously filmed stuff on location. Like, where have you gotten to travel? Were you traveling a lot with the magazine before?
Yeah. Depending on the year, but I was traveling quite a lot. I mean, 4 or 5 times a year, so, which is a lot for someone, and not that much for someone else. But I'm very grateful that I have visited many good places for water sports, like Maui, I think more than 10 times, like South Africa, like Caribbean, a lot, Japan, for Yes, three times. Many places, many times Tarifa, of course, many times Guincho, many times French Caribbean.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So no, I'm very grateful for. Thanks God for the life I am in.
You were given. Do you have little ones and stuff in France?
Yeah, my family is everyone is in France. Yeah, and in France we are very fortunate as well because so on the Atlantic side, especially Brittany where I was born, we have some very good waves, quite good wind with low pressure as well. So for wave sailing and windsurfing is very good. For wing foiling is good as well. But in South France, like where I'm living, it's just perfect. I think, from my point of view, it's I think the best place in Europe for riding all year long, since foiling, because the wind is the Mistral wind, Mistral, which is quite famous as a wind, blowing consistently, and we have. Sunny weather most of the time, so it's not very cold in the winter. So yeah, maybe today we are in February. Today it was like maybe 15 degrees, maybe more, maybe 20.
Oh, really?
So it's quite good, and we don't have the waves breaking waves like we can have in the Atlantic. But with the foil, it's not like if we don't care of breaking wave, but we can use chops, can use the swell to carve on it, and as soon as it's windy, and here it's kind of choppy, wavy, and then with the foil, it's big fun. So South France around Toulon is a very, very good place for our sports.
Oh, nice. So it's not a bad place to keep your home base then.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. So when jumping into instruction, have you done a lot of that stuff in the past, or was like instructing via video kind of brand new for you?
I have my instructor license for a while. But I never use it as an instructor, but as a head editor of magazines. We published every issue in the year, and a dedicated issue every year about how tools. So it was like, doing it for magazines or for videos is more or less the same. In the way you think about it, you need to explain to build your talk. It's the same way. It's another media, another way to communicate with people, but the basis is the same. So for me, to switch from magazine to video just for explaining stuff, it's no problem.
It was no problem at all. Okay, so you were the one that was in charge of writing those how-tos then?
No.
No,
I was hiring some people for that. But that's something I was used to, because when you are editor of a magazine...
Sorry.
Everything. You are maybe the only people reading all the, the article in the magazine.
Yep.
And since I had my lessons as an instructor, and I was like, so it was not very strange for me, but it was something I was familiar with, so it was easy.
Okay, no, that's nice. Yeah, because I find I was doing instruction for a few years before I got busier with other projects, but so I created a little bit of a lesson plan. I had to break it down in my head because everybody learns differently. And I've talked to a few instructors so far, and everybody has their own little way of empowering their students. And so I was just curious to see if that kind of came to be naturally. But yeah, reading all the how-tos and whatnot and getting years of experience, and that would have definitely made that transition a lot easier.
Yeah. Yeah, it's my way of thinking as well. I'm someone like is very structured and Cartesian, I would say maybe, and I think it works quite good with YouTube in one side and the other side with the age of the people watching me, because wing foiling is not yet a sport for it is a sport for young people, but it's the reality is that the most of the people are more like 40, maybe sometimes 50 years old, and that kind of people they like to be teach like something like in the university, you know,
and very structured.
Yeah. That's my my style. Maybe for younger people, for teenager, then it would be like more like you know, and yeah.
I found that actually, I was giving lessons to people, and how I would describe how a wing would fly is I would say you have a vertical and a horizontal axis. Your horizontal axis will dictate the movement, and then your power is built on the vertical. And you can go a -3 in the horizontal, and you can go pull down a bit, and you know, you'll get power at that degree. And they said, oh, that makes, but they were in 40 plus. I said, that makes so much sense to me, because you break it down in that very to understand, instead of just saying moving your arms or do this or do that, right? Like, so I guess that is something that I've come across as well. It makes sense that way. You got to break it down very, very simply. How communicative is your audience with you? Are they asking for stuff? Are they like bringing that into their own writing and then commenting on how much it helped them? Like, what did you find the collaboration aspect has been like?
It's been something that I was working for since the early days on YouTube, because since I was putting me in front of the camera, I was like stepping down from the ivory tour that I was in the in the magazines. Because the magazine, you don't see your face, you just write. People can read you, but cannot reply to you. And from the first video, I think I was asking for people to get me some feedback, to ask me a question, to request me some next topics of for videos. And I was trying to reply to everyone, I think, for over the last 3 years with my YouTube channel. I think I have replied to pretty much every comment, or maybe 90% of plus of the comments, because I for me it's important. I give a lot of value of to this exchange with the people. I don't want to be the guy like okay, I'm structured. I want to give tips to the people like in the university, but I don't want to be the untouchable people. So I'm very happy to reply to answer the question. Most of the question comes on my Instagram as well, like DM, because people, some are shy and don't want to be, go public on YouTube, or so they prefer to go DM on Instagram. So I try to reply to everyone as well, and of course lots of people comes to me on the beach, or sometimes in the airport, or sometimes in supermarket, or it's always good, because it's always, you know, passionate people, and I'm very happy to experience that, you know, to cross this these eyes, you know, full of passion, and we share that passion, and it's always very strong.
Oh, that's cool. A little mini celebrity then over there.
No, but I'm not, I'm not a celebrity, but you know, when you live,
I'm just kidding. Yeah. Everybody knows Wind Sports people.
No, it's not everybody.
I know.
There are lots of people, you know, at the beach, can imagine it's sometimes there are more than 100 people riding in the meantime. So it's if 2, 3 people, 4 people comes to you, when you are getting your gear ready, it's already 4%. But it's for people, and you talk with them, and it's very nice. And sometimes those people, they also go to a supermarket, and me as well. So sometimes we meet, and it's good, you know, no problem. But if I go in the middle of France or in the middle of Canada, I don't know. I'm sure no one will.
I'll wave. I'll say hi.
you.
Whoa, that's him. No, that's cool though. What was your favorite destination, for example, that you did either a video for, like a review, or one of your own kind of videos? Is there a top place that would stand out in the world that you felt was the most fun so far?
I would say Hawaii, Maui. I would say Maui. Because Maui, it's special because you have a lot of inspiring people, like Francisco, we talked before, but as well guys like Kailini, like all the people like Dave Kalama, for example. Well, it's not a good example because I never met him, but. But there's something happening on Maui, like very creative stuff about water sports that I like a lot. And over like maybe 10 kilometers of coastline, the same day you can do everything. You can do kiteboarding, can do windsurfing, can do wing foiling, can do SUP foiling, downwinding. And everything is surfing, of course. From the sunrise to sunset, always something to do, to have fun, to meet great people, to be inspired by great people. So the only difficult thing, it's very expensive. Well, but yeah, you have shepherds, you have, and everywhere else in the world, there are people inspiring me, or amazing shepherds. Amazing riders, but they are more like everywhere. You know, it's not like as the same concentration as in Maui.
Oh, that's a good point. How do you find the level of, let's say, if you're somebody listening to this show or watching your channel and they're brand new to wing foiling, it's their first 2 years, for example. Do you think Maui would be a good place for them to learn? What did you find the level required to ride there?
No, I don't kind of, I don't know. I'm not like recommending Maui for riding as average people. I would recommend Maui to experience, the culture of, riding, to feel the power of the Pacific. Sometimes it's, tough, like really tough.
Yes,
Pacific swells, like to watch some of the best riders in the world doing what they do the best, but for having holidays like to improve your own skills riding, then I think if you are not like already at a very good level, then you might find Maui difficult, or you will spend most of your time in the lagoon, and maybe you can have kind of as good lagoon for more affordable price or cheaper price. Closer to your home. I mean, depending on where you are living, but
that's true.
You know, us in France, for example, I would recommend people to use it. If they don't want to take a flight and to come to South France, like where I'm living, or otherwise, and go to Darla, for example, in Morocco, and you have some lagoon with a very consistent wind, very flat, and then if you spend a week there, then you will improve your skills 100% because you have the perfect condition to work on your skills. I mean,
yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's a good point, actually. And I think that's one thing to put out there is that there are places closer to home that would be maybe even better for learning. Like I just got back from a quick little week in La Ventana, Mexico, and I'm flying back out on the 13th and I'm going to stay there maybe till April or May. And it gets intermediate level when the wind climbs. And if you have 3-4 days of like bigger swell, and we had some days where I think I went out foiling and it was, must've been six foot, 7 foot swell, like overhead. And, but there are some days where it's really flat, and no wonder there's a lot of schools there and it's very conducive to learning. And there's other bays that you can do that are even flatter water. But then there's spots everywhere in the world now. And I think this is cool about this sport is it's opening this stuff up for people. That's like, we don't have to just go to one spot. You can take up the sport and learn it at home or learn it somewhere else. So that's kind of cool. So I'll let you know how La Ventana goes for the next few months. I think that's going to be fun just to get them a bit more sun on the face and go winging every day after. So that'll be kind of cool. But did you end up going to, were you able to go to AWSI this year? Because I know you you did win like an award for your channel, right? For like, you were the third top, not AWSI, but you were the third top content creator, I guess, in the world.
Yeah, I've heard about that. No, it was in AWSI. I don't think so.
No, it was
well, for another people, another stuff.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, I don't. I mean, thanks for the for voting for the people who voted for me, but I don't give that much importance or focus on this kind of award. For me, the award is to have people like learning from what I can share to them, and just for me to share stuff and makes people happy, to makes people more comfortable with all the sports and the culture and everything. And the best reward I can get is a smile of this, in the face of the people when I meet them. And then the award on social media for with voting and stuff like this. Sometimes there's just only 200 people voting, so...
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, it's good, and I congratulate the people winning. Yeah, it's no problem. But it's not the reason why I'm doing this. I'm doing my YouTube channel is not to get some this kind of reward. I'm not sure if I'm clear with it.
Yeah, do you want? Sorry, I was just looking at your Instagram channel for your tutorials because that's where I wanted to go next. but I see what you're saying, and so far your channel is exclusively in French. But yep. We were just talking with Frank, and I guess this is an introduction because a lot of our audience is all over the world. Like we got maybe 60, 70 countries that are listening in. We got Canada, the U.S., Australia, U.K. A lot of those countries are some of our top listeners, and thank you very much for everybody for tuning in and listen to us ramble on and talk about what we love. But we were just talking about whether or not if you were ever going to expand a little bit into the English market, or do you find that you're busy enough helping? My native tongue is French. There's a lot of French people, and I find a lot of content normally is not directly directed towards them. So it is nice to have a high caliber content for people of that mother tongue. Is that kind of what you found so far, or?
Yes, as you can see with me already, I'm not a native speaker in English, and I think I'm sure I'm not speaking good enough English to entertain people native, you know, or speaking better than me. So my choice from the beginning was to stick in to French, and because in France there are of course people speaking and understanding well English, but that's maybe not the most of the people. They are kind of they prefer to watch content in French. So that was my strategy, and since the market was the wing foiling didn't like he was very dynamic in France from the early days, and maybe was kind of a leader country, I would say. And so it was making sense as well. And now, of course, I have already a good community in France, but I also feel like I could expand more internationally, speaking English. But I have still the same limitation with my ability to speak in English like people would wish I would talk. And but I'm thinking about how I could go wider and just thinking about it.
Yeah, I it's a good thought, but in that sense, at least your niche your niche market is still pretty big. Like, you still have a lot of French speaking people, and it is nice to have content of that caliber for them, because everybody else is in English and it's not suited to them. So I think it's really nice to have that, and I think it's really important. And because you can go around, like I saw your interview with Keith in French, which is great. Like, how many times are you going to be able to have a French interview with like one of the best board shapers, right? Like, that's really cool. And I think that should be, and that's the thing with even this podcast only being in English, we could do some in French. And I wish there was a way to expand into other languages, because we had like even some people in small African countries tune in, where it would be nice to be able to offer it in another language, but maybe AI is going to help and they could just dub our voices and it'll be Chinese or Mandarin or whatever, right? Like, I think that stuff is coming. But yeah, how do you like doing like reviews and stuff on gear? Is that something that you enjoy doing for brands, like testing it out, giving feedback? Like, how did you find that journey into that part of the corporate part of this has been?
That's what I have been doing for forever, because I was not like doing myself the how-tos in the magazine, but I was very involved into the testing of the gear, so for forever. So yeah, that's my DNA, I would say. And so I like to test the gear a lot, and especially when it's moving a lot. When the gear is not moving that much, then sometimes it could get more, never boring, but less interesting, I would say, because then you have less things to explain, or less things to tell to people. But for the moment, the gear and the sport is moving fast, so it's very exciting, and I'm taking a lot of pleasure, a lot of fun doing this. So it's not like it's still not like a job. I mean, it's like a passion, and then when you are passionate, you work more.
yeah, you do, and you're up at 2 a.m. editing stuff and trying to make your thing the next day. Where did you see, obviously you've seen the progression of gear from your perspective, has been the biggest changes? Obviously wings have they've changed a lot, foils have changed a lot. Like, what have you seen, and what's been the most fun change for you?
What I've changed the most is, I think, definitely the foil, and it opens the path for everything else. Because as soon as the limitation with the speed was due to the foils, and that's the reason why at my very first day I wasn't like having very good fun, because it was like a 2000 front wing, going full speed at 12 knots. Then it was not working, and then if you go just 12 knots, then your wing push sideways, then the board, there is no wind speed, the speed, wind coming from front of you, so the board, you don't care, it doesn't, there is no aero involved. And as soon as you go faster, then it opens new perspective for the development of the wings, but as well for the with the boards and everything, the roll of the ball start, you know, or it makes the ball roll, and at the end of the day, maybe so the fall was the biggest change. And but the thing that surprised me the most is the evolution of the board at the end, because the boards at the beginning I thought it was like just a platform, as you can step on it and then fly. Then as soon as you fly, it doesn't count anymore. And at the end of the day, today the boards are making a huge difference for the capacity, the ability for getting up on the foil in the light winds, for ability to recover after touch, and the ability to go fast and in the air, you know, like the aero, I don't know, the aerodynamics of the boat plays quite a lot. And then you have the angle with the foils, many things that the board are very important, and the evolution of the board, like more narrow and more and longer, with the foil more forward. Was kind of I didn't imagine that 2 years ago.
Where do you think it's all going? What do you think after this phase? Like a lot of companies, like I know KT's releasing some stuff and coming up, they got some new versions of stuff. What do you think's coming at the next phase?
I think we are going to more specialized gear. For in the sports was born like 5 years ago, more or less. And at the beginning, we all get hooked into it. Because it was one foil, one board, one wing, like the most simple you can have. And it was, and the success of the early days was based on that, I think, simplicity. And today, we have like better understanding and where the sport is going as a sport, so where the people have interest in. So, for example, free fly, like going like surfing on the foil, maybe more than for some most of the people than going fast. And but some people they want to go fast either. So we kind of see the direction where the sport is going. And then I say we, but I'm not like involved into thinking the range of the brand, but I feel like I'm still part of all this. And yeah, now people will have the choice between different types of different kind of gear, depending on what they prefer as a riding. And this is good because people could have more fun. But in the other way, in the other end, it's a bit like dangerous, because we end up with three boards, five foils, five wings, and then it's not affordable anymore. And sometimes I'm a bit worried about that. Because the sport starting like very simple, and one board, one foil, one wing can do everything with that, whatever the wind, the strength, whatever the wave and stuff. And now we end up with a full van and maybe, I don't know, sometimes 10,000 euros of gear inside. It's like, I don't know if we are
making
the same mistake that we did with windsurfing and kiteboarding, you know?
Well, I guess industry has to sell product and they have to create product, and they're going to want to niche out their product lines to get like continual income coming in, because there are only going to be so many new beginners. So I kind of understand it from a business standpoint and it makes sense. But like for those people at home and listening in and even watching your channel, like you can still get away with one board, one foil, and let's say a 4 or 5 meter wing, and you just go out when those conditions are good for it. There's nothing wrong with that. I still have my first foil from Armstrong that I got 3 years ago, 1550. And I just, on this trip to La Ventana, got to try out some brand new Axis gear. And obviously, because it's 3 years newer, there's some performance changes. And like if I breach out of the water, I can put the foil back in, I can tip breach, I can do all these things that my older foil wasn't designed to do, but nobody's foil could do that back then. But it's still super fun.
Yeah.
Like I still have a blast. It's still like, you're still, if you ride a Civic, you're still getting around. Sure, it's not a Ferrari, but you still get to have fun. You still get to go to the grocery store.
You know, I mean,
so like, I, right. Yeah, exactly.
But we need to not forget that. And
yes,
to inspire people, not only because we have the van full of gear, but because we have fun, and because they can have fun also with a very simple gear as we used to have. And
yes.
And it's very, very important. And I think I try to do it already, but sometimes I testing new gears and giving information to the most avid people for this new novelty, you know. But I think it's very important that people like me sells as well. You can have fun with one foil, one board, one wing, for all the summer. And it can be enough.
Yeah, and it could be okay. And now with used gear, if you're unable to go and spend $5,000-$6,000 US or Euro or even Canadian or other, you can find gear at a lower price point that performs well. That's the nice thing about innovation and driving it forward. So now all of our gear, because everybody watches everybody, all of the gear is getting substantially better, easier to use, more performance. So I think that's another cool concept as well. And hopefully, maybe with this surplus of stock, then some prices are going to come down, which will allow other people to get in, because not everybody can spend $6,000 to $10,000 to get started. So that could be a positive. The brands are helping in this way by taking a little bit of a hit, but maybe you're right. Maybe this will help other people get into the sport.
Yeah, of course. Of course. The price is always an important topic when talking to going wider. So the competition between the brands, I think helps the price. Not always the public price like on the catalog, but the reality in the shop. The price actually people pay is a bit lower maybe today than 1 or 2 years ago. But as we said as well, the second hand market is very dynamic, and which is pretty good, because the early days after the COVID, there was no second hand, and then the entry ticket into the sport was very high. Now it's more affordable thanks to second hand, and there are some very good gear available on second hand, because maybe the first generation of foil and wings, they are still fun. We had fun with it, so it's still possible to have fun with it. But you can find very good stuff like from last year or the year before, and quite affordable, I think.
Yeah, that's true. Like we have like a little Facebook group that's growing. It's like the Canadian classifieds for wing foiling and stuff. And now it's called Wing Life with the podcast. But there's a lot of people posting stuff all the time. And it's one of the main buy and sells in Canada and stuff for gear. And people posting stuff all the time. People are picking up stuff from there all the time. So it's really nice to have that network. And they're all over the world, which is cool. But that is another cool thing as well. So But when's your next, like, where are you off to next for a cool shoot or some work?
As I said, I'm fortunate enough to live in Toulon. And
so you're okay.
We are shooting, yeah, we are shooting all year long with amazing conditions. So yeah, I think I'm supposed to stay here for the next weeks. I might go to Caribbean in next month. Not confirmed okay. yet, but I'm happy here. You know, I'm with my family. We have very good conditions. And it's good to travel, it's good to see new places, it's good to see, to visit very good places like Maui and stuff. But I cannot forget that it's not that good for nowadays to take planes and, you know. So since we have good conditions here, I feel happy enough to
That's
be
cool.
here. And yeah, I don't. It's good. I appreciate like traveling, but I'm not. I'm happy if I'm here. I'm staying home. I mean, and it doesn't really. It's not really bad even for producing content because we have sun, we have wind. I mean. Just if I look for some specific conditions for special ways, for example, or maybe it's easier to go to travel, but I don't feel any special need right now. So
yeah, you guys got good conditions over there and stuff. So that's pretty awesome. Is there anything else you wanted to touch upon? On peut parler en français aussi un petit peu, faire genre allô à tes fans en France. But happy to do that as well. Is there anything you'd want to touch on today to introduce to people who are listening to you maybe in English for the first time?
Yeah, but I'm happy if I can touch new people and share my knowledge, my experience, everything what I received from my previous job and all the people I've been lucky enough to meet. If I can share it with more people, I will be even more happy. And if you are watching my channel and you don't speak French, check the subtitles because you can activate the English subtitles most of the time. I think it's only some interviews that I don't translate because it's been more complicated. But all my tutorials, my reviews and stuff are all translated to English. And yeah, I'm always happy to meet new people at the beach as well. So, and feel free to come to me. And thanks to all the people following me. I mean, it means a lot for me to have so many people watching my video, and I'm very happy that I can help you to appreciate more your time on the water. And yeah, that's it. Have fun.
That's cool. All right, everybody. Well, hey, thanks for joining us tonight on this kind of cool episode with a fellow content creator. And we will see you all next time. And make sure to check out, before we go, make sure to check out his YouTube channel. So, Erwan, what is your YouTube channel and website and Instagram handles and stuff?
My YouTube channel names is Watersport Zone. So, Watersport Zone, easy. You can type on your browser, it's like youtube.com/@ Watersport Zone. You can go direct to it. Feel free to explore the playlist. I think there are more than 200 videos now because I publish video every week, every Saturday morning, and sometimes a bit more in the summer. So more than 200 videos about wing foiling, windsurfing, kitesurfing, downwind foiling, which I started last year, and I'm very hooked in as well. And And yeah, feel free to visit, and hopefully you can meet as well on Instagram. My Instagram is it's my name, Erwan Geoffroy, and I'm sharing content as well, not every day, almost every day, and let's meet there.
All right, perfect. All right, thanks everybody, and we'll chat soon.